join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. After 5 years as CEO of the Prince George's County School System, last week, Dr. Monica Golson announced her retirement at the end of the school year. The announcement was a surprise to many, and she started in the classroom 32 years ago and is ending her career at the top. What's behind this decision? Well, we're doing a bit of an exit interview tonight. Lines are open. Give us a call if you have a comment or a question at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Golson, thanks for coming in. Congratulations. Is that a good thing?
Yes, it's a great thing, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming in. Why now? 5 years, but you are 32 years, yes, but you're still a young woman. Why do this now?
Yes, well, actually, my contract would have concluded June 30th, 2023. And by law, I would have had the option to have a conversation with the county executive and the Board of Education about extending my contract. But I made a decision that at the conclusion of this school year, I would move on. Mm-hmm. It was by law. I also have to make that announcement before February 1 to provide the county executive time to begin the search process.
Okay. But why now? Why not extend your contract?
Well, I was very clear and transparent in the letter that I provided to the community that I have made a decision that at this time it's become abundantly clear to me that the Board of Education and I no longer have the same philosophical beliefs. Mm-hmm. I have been focused on children from the first day that I walked through the door 5 years ago as CEO, and even when I started in the classroom 32 years ago. And I made it clear to the Board of Education that if we both could not focus on students, then it was clear that we needed to part our ways.
How are those philosophical differences passing, you know, what was the problem with your philosophical differences with them?
Well, first one, you could easily see in any board meeting, one, they're on YouTube, or you could come and participate and see now, many times those board meetings were focused on adult personal agendas and not focused on children. There were times where there could have been conversations between board members and myself, and instead they went directly to media. And it's important to know that I have 131,000 students who many are doing amazing things. And when I want to focus on children, it became them focusing on themselves and adult issues.
Mm-hmm. As you said, a lot of the issues regarding the board were very, very public. You could see during the Zoom meetings and the like, some of the infighting and, you know, some of the yelling, some of the sniping and the like. Some people would say, as we've seen on Capitol Hill, that democracy is messy. Was it just too messy for you?
It became too messy. For me, I focused every day from the time I woke up until the time I went to bed around what decisions we needed to make that was in the best interest for students and staff members and their families. When we're not able to really focus on the work of the school system, when their focus is on their own personal agendas, it became clear once again that I needed to move on. And that moving on is to spend more time with my family.
What was the biggest issue for you?
I think there's so many, to be honest.
Really?
While the media would have you believe that it was centered around the chair of the Board of Education, it's not. That's just one of several board members. And there was a request for board members to be able to select the new chair for the board. They had that opportunity in December and unfortunately walked away after 7 votes, very similar to the GOP, not 15, but 7, without a chair. And I believed really going into that December meeting that this is an opportunity for them to come together, to select new leadership and show that they're going to change and move forward. And when it became clear that they weren't going to meet, come together, figure out how they could work as a team, I thought, as much as I wanted them to come together, it just seemed to be impossible.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Dr. Monica Golson, the CEO of the Prince George's County School System, announced her retirement last week and will leave at the end of this semester. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The problems with the school board did not start when you got there. There were problems that were there long before you arrived. Did you go in with your eyes wide open, or were there some rose-colored glasses there before, you know, as you took the job?
I went in with my eyes wide open. I received my doctorate from Howard University. I know, based on the work in my dissertation, that the one area that could determine the longevity of an urban superintendent is around the political frame. Mm. But I also went in believing that if everyone truly said and worked the same way, which is that they believe that they would work towards doing what's best for children, then we would always be able to move our path forward. I never believed that it would be easy. And I always knew that there would be areas that we would disagree. That really is how the work moves forward. But at some point, when you realize that everyone does not have the same agenda, then it became difficult.
What was stagnant? What never changed from the time you arrived until last week?
Infighting. The disrespect for each other back and forth. I do my best to try to model for our students and our families what I expect from them. And then you turn into a board meeting and you don't see the same. We have board members who don't attend meetings over time. If you're committed to the work, you do have to put in the investment of coming to the meetings, reading the literature in advance, asking questions. I'm always available to respond to their concerns or questions, but you really do have to be committed to the work.
If the board did not have some of these political infighting issues and the disagreements amongst themselves and with your administration, would you have stayed?
I really do believe I would have. While the pandemic was difficult to navigate, there was not a single playbook or strategy that would have prepared me for that experience. The support from the community around what we needed to do to support our students through that experience is what gave me the energy to continue to move forward. It just becomes difficult when the work is never ending. And you can't really move forward with everything you want to do when you're spending time trying to navigate adults and children.
Since you mentioned the pandemic, let's talk about that. No one was prepared for that. School superintendents, mayors, city managers, parents, children, news anchors. No one was prepared for that. And I remember seeing many of your videos out to the community. And if I may, I could see the concern, the stress, the worry. What was the most difficult part about that after that, I guess, that first weekend in March when everything shut down?
Really, it was around what are we going to do next? Because we honestly left in March believing we would be gone for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I took books off of my desk and thought, oh, great, I'm going to be able to catch up on some professional literature in these 2 weeks and we'll be back. And clearly that is not what happened. Only a few days into that 2 week hiatus, it became clear, oh no, this is going to be a little longer. And we had to figure out how to pivot and provide instruction for over 130,000 students quickly, and to do it using technology. And we were not at that time a one-to-one school district.
One-to-one?
So one-to-one means that every child has a laptop device in front of them.
Mm-hmm. Take me inside some of those staff meetings with your lieutenants when you realized that the world had changed.
Well, we met every day, including mm-hmm. Sundays, for hours at a time. We talked about what we needed to do to get everyone up and moving and to get instruction back online, for us to get some sense of normalcy. That's all we wanted for our children. And we had to use a variety of platforms. We used lessons on TV. We had packets that people could pick up when they were picking up meals. For those who could do online, we did. I went out and asked community members, if you have a laptop, please allow a child to use it. We had some technology, but because our community was able to help, we had parents, 15,000 parents, who said, my child can use my laptop, so that we could distribute to those who did not have access.
We've seen all kinds of reports over the past year or so about learning loss. Talk to me a little bit about that, and how do you believe that the Prince George's County school system moving forward and school systems across the country can address the post-COVID? And I say that with air quotes, because we know COVID is still with us.
Yes.
But how, post the severity that we've seen in the past, how do you fix that?
We have to use non-traditional ways to address the needs of our students. So that means it's going to have to be outside of the school day. Our teachers are doing a phenomenal job of really helping to provide one-to-one service and support when they can. We have a Wow Wednesday where literally our teachers are doing small group instruction and students are working online at the same time. So they're able to meet the needs of those students who may be behind and those who are moved forward and can accelerate. But we're also offering after school support. We do 24/7 tutoring. We have free summer school. This is the second summer we offered it. This summer will be the third summer. We need our parents to make sure their children are participating in these experiences, because that is the only way we can begin to close that gap.
How has COVID changed students and parents?
Our students are suffering mentally. I think they've seen a lot more than what we would have seen at that age. And during a pandemic, they were home for an extended period of time. They didn't have an opportunity to reconcile what their parents were experiencing, who to talk to. We've provided mental health providers and practitioners in our schools. But in a community of color, we also have to deal with the stigma around accessing those supports. So we're also convincing our children and their parents that it's okay to say that you need someone to talk to and that you need coping strategies. We need our parents to understand that our students are learning differently. We also started an online campus because some students felt like they did their best in that online experience. When lots of our students came back to the in-person experience, and they're still spending lots of time even after school trying to help to close that academic gap.
How did it impact you personally?
Personally, every day. There were nights where I would go to bed at 10 and wake back up at 1. Because I always had on my mind, was I making the right decision that would protect students and staff? It's so important to know that while others were going back into school, for Prince George's County, we had the highest rate of COVID
infection. Yeah.
And we did. And I wanted to make sure that our staff and our students were safe. And even when it was unpopular to say, when the governor announced that we had to return to school in January of 2020, I said we weren't going to go back right then, that I needed to make sure staff were vaccinated first, because I knew the fear from staff returning. I knew they were worried. They wanted to be in front of their kids, but they also were worried about, were they going to bring the disease home? So COVID-19 home. And in order to move us forward, I had to make some unpopular decisions. Would I do it all over again? I sure would.
We're talking to Dr. Monica Golson, the CEO of the Prince George's County Public School System, about retirement. She made an announcement last week that she is leaving at the end of this school year. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You spoke about safety. One of the biggest stories related to school safety happened on Friday, where a 6-year-old first grader is accused of shooting his teacher in class. The shock is still palatable for anyone, I'm sure, for administrators, for teachers, for parents, and certainly for children who understand what has happened. Obviously, it's a terrible story, but the superintendent of the Newport News school system was very, very transparent in yesterday's press conference, saying, you know, we were not prepared for anything like this. It was wholly unexpected. And so now, like COVID, they're starting from the ground up, having to deal with this kind of safety issue. How would you address the aftermath to make sure that something like this, that a school system, your school system, is prepared for that?
We have 198 schools.
Yeah.
And we work extremely hard to make sure that our schools are prepared for these types of incidents. So, for example, I've met with our police department and our staff in the summer. We talk about preparation. We've done drills. We do quarterly drills. The police department has come in and done drills in the summer when staff is not there, and we've used other community members to help do a mock simulation of what potentially happened. It's unfortunate that we are in this state, in this day and time, where we have to practice those kinds of drills. When I was growing up, we just did a fire drill. Mm-hmm. We didn't practice a lockdown drill. We didn't practice what happens if another person is injured. But we all have to be clear, we're going to have to make some serious decisions and have conversations around gun use and policies.
I'll let you finish your thought on the other side. We're going to take a break, but don't forget you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. And don't forget to download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. Stay with us. If you are on the phone, that includes Star calling from Maryland, Rochelle calling from Northeast, and Norman calling from Waldorf. We'll talk to you next. I'm Harold Fisher. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. This conversation continues in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking to Prince George's County Public Schools CEO, Dr. Monica Goldson. She announced last week that she is retiring. We're talking about what she did, what she's doing, and what she's going to do after she leaves the school system after 32 years. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Star calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Star. What's on your mind?
Hi. So I'm calling from Montgomery County, and what I wanted to know was what was Dr. Monica Goldstein planning on doing once she's retired? Because I am a homeschool parent. I've been a homeschool parent for 21 years. And so this whole, everything that happened during the pandemic, that wasn't new for me. Like 21 years ago when I made a decision to start homeschooling, it wasn't an easy decision to make. And I had to sacrifice a lot for that decision. But I felt back then that we were in a pandemic. So, you know, the hardest part of being a homeschool parent for 21 years, we're trying to work with the public school teachers, because there were a lot of times where I took my children to participate in some of the after-school activities just to be able to have some engagement. And it was just like, okay, well, you know, we're all on our own.
Well, Star, let me stop you. What is your question?
So my question is, what is she planning on doing? Because I am a homeschool parent, and I'm looking for people who are retired that are interested in tutoring or have tutoring programs that they're going to be developing.
Well, let's see what Dr. Goldson has to say about that.
Well, thank you, Star, for calling in, and I wish you the best in your homeschool experience. But I actually am looking forward to spending some quality time with my family. I have two sons and my mom who live here, and I am trying to move my aunt here as well. So I am just looking forward to spending time with family, traveling, not making a decision every 15 minutes, and only having one telephone.
Mm-hmm. With that said, however, you're still in charge until you're not.
I am. I am
so
here
until
June 30th.
So what would you suggest to her?
So definitely, there are lots of educators who are willing to do tutoring outside of the work day. So please reach out to your child's neighborhood school to see if there are any teachers available there. And there are also several organizations that offer tutoring also 24/7. If you want, you can send me an email at ceo@pgcps.org, and I will connect you with several of those organizations.
Star, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Rochelle calling from Northeast D.C. Rochelle, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. First, I wanted to give Dr. Goldstein, if I said her name correctly.
Yeah, how about that?
For her service.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's sad to hear. It's not sad because it's bittersweet. She's put in the work, sort of like Prime, you know, no pun intended. When you put in work, and I won't say it's not appreciated because the children, you know, definitely, I'm sure, appreciated it, that dedication, because what you end up being is a mother, you know. And I was fortunate here to have my children from the Florida area taught by some awesome folks, and they happen to be HU alumni. So I don't know if that's a thing, but it seems to work. I wish she would stay in the arena. I know she's going to, they tell you sometimes don't be weary in well-doing, but I wish she would stay in the arena and kind of, sort of, hopefully I'm not stepping on anybody's toes, but one of our leaders of the university is leaving, and I wish she would consider. But, you know, nevertheless, I just want to tell her thank you, and after she takes her vacation, to reconsider, to continue to teach our children with excellence and care.
Thank you so much. I've had 32 years. I know I will miss it, and I will definitely take your advice under
Rochelle,
consideration.
Thank you so much for your phone call. Norman calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I have. You know, I know the resignation is effective June 30th, but what is the plan to keep the students of Prince George's County safe for the remainder of the school year? Because I mean, to be quite honest, it's for the last 5 years, and even before that, I mean, it just appears to be a circus-like atmosphere throughout many of the schools, and the students are not being held accountable for their misbehavior in the classroom, inside and outside of the classroom. I mean, and basically, you know, many students aren't safe, and it has to be some sort of accountability, and, you know, as far as student accountability, parent accountability, and many of the students aren't coming to school feeling safe.
Well, let's see what she has to say about that, Norman. Please go right ahead.
Thank you so much for that question. So I'll tell you, we have 131,000 students, and when we really delve deep into our data to look around our discipline issues, it represents about 5% of our student population. So I don't want to put all of our students in one basket, but I will tell you, I've recently held a discipline teletown hall. I need parents to help as well. You have to have parents. I need parents to have conversations with their children daily. If they're having experiences in school and they need a trusted adult to talk to, we have people they can go to. They can't solve their issues by themselves. We have found that out because they decide to do it physically instead of trying to work through it. In addition, we also have a committee that is looking at some artificial intelligence tools that we can potentially use to make sure that our students are not bringing weapons into our facilities. And as I shared earlier, we also have mental health practitioners at over 160 schools at this point. We have 198, so we only have a few more to go, so that students feel comfortable going to someone to talk through their experiences before they act on them.
Norman, thank you so much for your phone call. I want to go back to one of the things that we were talking about, and this kind of dovetails into what Norman was speaking about. a month or so ago, late last month, there was a shooting at Suitland.
Correct.
At the same time, we are now looking at what happened last week in Anne Arundel County schools, where a 12-year-old brought a handgun to school, a 12-year-old, but is not, because of a new Maryland law, not facing any charges. And I know, okay, the law is the law. I can only imagine when I was in the Prince George's County school system at 12, if someone had brought a gun to school, you would have been immediately expelled, and you would have been facing some kind of legal something. Just kind of talk to me about, from your perspective, where we are with this. You know, we've got Newport News, the situation in Suitland. You were there.
Yes.
With the county executive and the police chief and others, and this Anne Arundel County thing. Your thoughts about all of this?
So it's important to know that a student will get a consequence from the school system, and they'll also receive a consequence from the police department, juvenile system. For us, we are still moving forward with an expulsion, request for expulsion. What that means is at the very beginning of that process, the immediately suspended. They have 2 weeks to come and appeal, give their version of the story, and provide what happened. And then we have a hearing officer that then renders a decision from there. We've made it very clear. I've said this at every parent event that it is unacceptable to bring a gun or a weapon to school, and a student that does so will receive consequences. There is no place in a school for it. And I've also pleaded with parents, for those parents who legally have a gun, to please secure that gun. Because I want to make sure that our students do not have an opportunity to bring that gun. I am grateful that our Prince George's County Police Department has been lock in step with us. When we've had threats, they've immediately gone to the children's home, and they've also contacted Homeland Security. So now those students, that home, all that information is now logged into a database and is being monitored. So we want our community to know that we are going to give us consequence from Prince George's County Public Schools.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Erica calling from Maryland. Erica, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm disappointed to hear that you're retiring, Dr. Golson, and I want to thank you for the service that you did give us in Prince George's County. It's a shame that we can't keep good superintendents in our county, and this is very disappointing to hear, but I get it, and I've seen the madness with the school board, which is very disappointing, and I'm thinking that we might have to go back to an appointed board again, because our constituents just not making very good decisions on electing an effective school board. But thank you for the service you did give us for these past few years. And I know you have been very responsive to parents when you can, and you definitely have a lot on your plate with the amount of students that you have to deal with. And so, but I just want to thank you and wish you was going to stay a little longer.
Thank you so much for those kind words. And I've been having this discussion frequently around what are next steps. I think several things could happen. One, we could go back to an appointed board, which allows us to really have an opportunity to create an environment for stability. We need to take our school system back, and I think an appointed board would allow us to do that. But I understand that this is a democracy, and what I also believe in is that people have to make informed decisions. And so I am asking our community, to every board election, please do your research beforehand. Don't make a decision based on the number of flyers that you get in the mail or the last billboard that you saw before you walked in to pull the lever to vote. And I am committed to, before every board election, to hold a forum of those candidates to allow them to share what their platform is and how they plan to support who's ever in that seat, what that looks like, and to be able to inform our community when they're candidates who are making promises that are out of the realm of their actual governance structure.
Erica, thank you so much for your phone call. So you would prefer an appointed board?
I definitely would. I have not made that a secret. I've been in the school district for 32 years, and the most effective board that I have seen is one that has been all appointed.
Appointed by whom?
Well, that I don't know that I have that solution yet. I can't say that one person can do that. I think if we had a committee of stakeholders who really reviewed and looked at candidates to be on an appointed board, would be great. What I can tell you is there's value in having a diverse panel of professionals, people who have a variety of backgrounds, and who do not have personal agendas.
Mm-hmm. What do you, and so as you just said, as it relates to the voters, you know, some people would push back against that and say you're taking away, as you said, my democratic choice. Do you feel that voters just are not participating as well as they could be in order to make the best choices?
I definitely agree. I think what happens is that you show up, you have a long list of candidates, and you're really paying attention to some of the very top key positions, maybe governor, delegates, county council members, and you're not spending as much time as you should around a school board candidate or decision, and you take for granted that, oh yeah, I see a billboard
or a flyer.
Mm-hmm. I've gone to what I call book face, and I've seen a statement, and I'll just go with that. But we do all have to do our research, just like we do for all those other positions.
What do you believe is the biggest mistake you've made?
Wow, if you were to ask me that, I would say every day I've made mistakes.
A political answer.
Well, actually, it's not. For me, I've always been reflective about what I've done for the day and what I could change. You know, I've questioned today, could we have really posted what our rules were for what you need to do to become a charter? Because I had someone who questioned it, the process today. So I'm thinking, okay, what can I do tomorrow to make sure that no other program or organization who wants to become a charter school experiences that. So if a really great leader won't say it's just one thing.
Well, certainly there's been something that you look back on, and every time you think about it, you know, it's a, there's got to be. I know I have them. I have two or three, which, you know, I wish I could have that day back, and that would completely make my career a whole lot better if I could just take that day away.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. If there were any days that I could take back, it'd be days where we lost a student. It wouldn't be a day where I learned what I could do better about myself, but it would be a day where I could give a parent back their child. Those are the days where I go to bed and I say, I wish I could have done something to prevent that. And whether it's from a child who has taken their life, a child who came to us who was ill and could not finish their education experience because of their illness, a child we lost in a car accident, those are the times where I go to bed, where there's an extra prayer, there's a tear in my eye, or I wake up in the morning worried about that family and how they will live from that day on without that child. Those are those times.
Certainly, you would consider yourself responsible for all, what do you say, 131,000 students. But in that particular case, those things may not necessarily be your responsibility. A car accident for a child who was driving on a Saturday is not the purview of the public school system.
It's important. That is so true. But it impacts that school community.
Mm-hmm.
We then, while it might have been on a Saturday, I have a crisis team that shows up in that school building on Monday. Mm-hmm. If I don't make the right decision around COVID, I could have had several crisis teams who would have been in our schools for that. So while it might be an incident that happens outside of school, it always comes back into it. And that's also why that student discipline and the school safety piece is so important. We need our community members and we need our students. If they're experiencing something in the community, they have to tell us. They can't wait until there's something tragic that happens for them to say, oh yeah, I heard that there was a dispute in the community on Friday, and now it's Tuesday, and now we're having a conversation about something that's happened to one of our children because someone didn't speak up.
What do you believe is your greatest accomplishment, your greatest single accomplishment? Don't tell me it's something that you did today.
No, it won't be. It really would be the 10 new schools that we have opening over the next 2 years, and we have 6 more in the second tranche that we're hoping to finalize before my departure June 30th. We went for 12 years without schools being built. And then when we started again, it was one school at a time. Our schools have an average age of over 50 years of age. Our children deserve better. And if we want to for them to have world-class experiences, we have to put them in world-class facilities.
Do the optics of that matter as much as the foundation of what new schools bring?
No, because I had the pleasure of opening a new school. What really matters is what happens once those students enter that building. You can have 198 new schools, but if you don't have teachers committed to the work that has to happen in the classroom and administrators who are going to lead it and a CEO and superintendent who's going to monitor and move that work forward, those 198 amazing buildings mean nothing.
One of the criticisms that is consistent of any school administrator, DC Public Schools, Prince George's, Montgomery, when we've spoken to Alexandria, the biggest challenge and complaint that parents have has to do with special education. How do you fix that? They all are very passionate about it, obviously, because they have special needs children. Some of those special needs are very small. Some of them are gargantuan. How do you add more special needs resources, teachers, whatever?
That's an excellent observation, and you're right. Special education, every child who's been identified as being special needs has an individualized education plan, which means that it's no cookie cutter approach. Everyone has something very specific to meet their needs. It's very important that we, as educators, understand what those specific needs are. The best way to do that is to have a smaller student-teacher ratio for those special needs students. That's number one. And we've got to continue to provide even more educators in the field of special education. I'm grateful that we do have a pipeline that we're creating through our Teacher Academy, but it's still not enough. And the work of our special educators is so important.
If you had your druthers and money was not an object, what would you do today? Allow me the magic wand and bibbidi-bobbidi-boo. What would you add that the school system does not have right now?
That would be a little bit more money for our professionals.
A little bit?
A little bit more.
Some of them would probably say, can we
a lot more.
A lot more.
Let me tell you, if that magic wand, that means that it could come multiple times. I'm grateful that we've been able to have historic salary increases for all 5 of our labor partners. But I've said this over and over, it's still not enough. And so if I were able to hit that lottery tonight, then I'd be able to give some additional funds to our educators. I thought we were turning the corner when we were coming back to a point of the pandemic and returning students back into the classroom, and parents were our co-teachers, and people understood the value of educators. We pay a lot for our professional athletes, and while I appreciate what they do for us, all of them have had to come through an educator. Every professional athlete has had some education, formal education, elementary, middle, high, and in many cases, college. But we don't pay those people enough. And so if I had that magic wand, it would be to pay our educators more.
Again, air quotes, we're post-COVID. What is it that you believe is the most difficult thing with retaining teachers? Is it money? Is it the profession at large? What would you say?
I think there are a variety of things. Money could very well be one, but we are no longer the same school district that we left at the beginning of the pandemic. We now are using technology more than ever. Our students are coming to us with greater needs, more social-emotional needs. We have parents who are asking for even more, and we're wanting to find ways to give it to them. And our students want to learn differently. And you have to be willing as an educator and an administrator to do some innovative, out-of-the-box thinking and using of strategies in order to meet the needs of our students. If you're at a point in your career where you have decided, I don't want to do that, then many of those educators have made a decision to leave. But I am hoping that we have now a plethora of people who want to come into the profession, who've had another profession, who find the value in working with our young students, and those who want to stay because they realize that they are making a difference.
You are in a unique position because you started in the classroom 32 years ago. So let me ask you, and you touched on it just briefly, how have students changed from the way they were in 1991? My colleagues, my friends, my associates, some of whom work in public school systems in other parts of the country, they often, will say, and some of them are teachers, they're hands-on, but they will say, we didn't have some of the issues when we were students that the students that they are teaching, that they are seeing, are having now. What has happened?
Well, I can tell you, when I was growing up, I never asked the teacher, why am I learning this? How is this relevant to the work that I plan to do when I leave here?
I did, but I ended up in the principal's office.
I did not, because I did not want to end up in the principal's office, and my mother handled me when I got home.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And too. So times have changed. Students ask that question, and we have to create a curriculum and experiences that allow our students to understand why. And we have a program at Potomac High School called Three-Dimensional Education, where students are actually taking problems of practice from corporate America and actually providing them with solutions. And what they don't realize is that while they're doing that, they're doing mathematics, they're doing public speaking, they're writing. And so we're finding ways to bring our students to the table that help them in the way that they need to and want to learn. The other part of it is, as I shared earlier, they've experienced things that we did not. While I was growing up, if my mom experienced anything financial, I never knew anything about it.
Mm.
If she was one paycheck away from not being able to pay the mortgage or put food on the table, I never knew anything about it. I was able to show up at the table and there'd be something there. I think this pandemic, our students have seen lots of experiences that their parents went through and have not had an opportunity to reconcile, have conversations with their parents about it, or even talk about how they felt and what had to be done in order to make ends meet through that process.
Yeah. And to that point, there have been over the past not just 32 years, but if you go all the way back to the D.C. sniper, I think that opened the eyes of a lot of parents and teachers and children with the student who was shot in Bowie. We continue to talk about the whole issue related to violence, Sandy Hook, that was, again, an elementary school. There was an interview that you may have seen several months ago where those children who survived it 10 years ago, they are now 16 and 17. They were 6 and 7 then. And so I think that the exposure to a lot of things that children are seeing now, as you suggested, you nor I saw. We didn't see those kinds of things back then.
And I haven't even added in social media.
Talk about that real quick.
Social media, our students are able to access and information that typically we would have gone to a library to get, or they're using social media as a way to make comments to other students that are inappropriate, that are not respectful, and they're able to hide behind social media in doing so. And so we have to, as a community and as parents, be vigilant around what types of social media our students, our children use. Are we monitoring it? You know, I jokingly call it book face. I don't have it. Mm. I don't spend time on it. Because I also believe that it's an opportunity for people to put, and everyone has an opinion, but sometimes those opinions then turn into facts and what people believe are facts. And it's also has been a way, a platform for us to not be respectful to one another. And it has been a platform for hurt.
And finally, you said after June 30th, you're going to spend time with your family and see the world outside of, you know, the Prince George's County school system and have just one phone and the like. So a month after you had a chance to do that, what are you going to do? You're a young woman, and I'm sure you have ideas and thoughts. Are you literally just going to put your feet in hot sand with an adult beverage? Or are you going to do something else? What do you want to do?
Yes, I definitely will put my feet in hot sand with an adult beverage. But I was blessed to be able to go to South Africa in November. And there's a country, the country of Bafokeng, that is really looking for assistance in how they can educate and support their children. And I'd be willing to support them from here and providing support on ways that they can begin to create an environment where their students can have a one-to-one experience. Or, you know, I learned that there are students who are missing 2 months of school because of their menstrual cycle. And so I'm going to find ways to support them there. I'm passionate about supporting children, and so I'm going to find ways to continue to do that, but on my own time.
Dr. Monica Golson, the outgoing CEO of the Prince George's County Public School System, thank you for spending some time with us. Good luck to you. Find the hot sand in the adult beverage. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, January 10th, 2023. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.